Hi, everyone. Welcome to our ghost tour of Old Town Lafayette, Colorado. My name is Olivia Mickle, and I am the host of the What's Her Name History Podcast. This tour was originally offered in person for Halloween 2020, but we have also decided to offer it as an audio tour so that you can take it anytime you'd like. Our tour begins in front of the Mary Miller Theater at 300 East Simpson Street, so if you're not there yet, pause the tour and head there now. Standing here in front of the Mary Miller Theater, it's pretty clear that this theater started its life as a church. It was founded in 1892 by Mary Miller, the founder of Lafayette, as a congregational church, and it has served as a church, a Christian Science reading room, a pandemic hospital during the Spanish flu epidemic of 1918, a library twice, and finally as the live theater that it is now. If you've never attended a production inside the theater, you really should. It's a gorgeous building. It's also haunted. There are several major manifestations that members of the theater company especially have experienced inside this building. At one point when the company here was producing an adaptation of a Hitchcock film, they had a functional coffin on stage. A scene painter was on stage finishing up the end of the scenery and heard a knocking, tapping sound. They couldn't figure out where it was coming from. She investigated, checked the door, checked the building. There was no one else around. Finally, she realized that the knocking was coming from inside the coffin. Being a reasonable person, she immediately piled every heavy thing she could find on top of the coffin and fled. And to this day, she will not work in the theater unless someone else is there with her. Now, given Mary Miller's reputation as an extremely religious woman who was very committed to keeping Lafayette a temperance city, in fact, everything east of Public Street was a dry town, no alcohol allowed until the 1980s, it seems kind of a cruel joke that her town would now have more breweries than any other city in the nation, and that her church is now a theater. When I heard that Mary Miller haunts this theater, I personally thought that she's doing so because she is furious. However, that's not the experience that the theater company has had. During another production, the company had an old-fashioned lift-up window installed in the set. The window had been open for many months, but when a new crew member was getting a tour of the theater, the director mentioned that many people believe that Mary Miller is still in the theater. At the moment her name was mentioned, the window slammed down. It didn't just close, it didn't drift, it slammed with force. Everyone was startled and started laughing and realized, well, apparently she is still here and she wanted us to know it. Remember the company occasionally hear the sound of someone singing or humming to themselves? But anytime they try to locate the source of the sound, they're unable to find where it's coming from. It appears to be coming from everywhere all at once. I'm also excited to announce to you that I have breaking news on the ghost front. As I was doing the research for this tour in October 2020, I took a walk with a friend who sees dead people. And as we stood in front of the church, she looked up to the circular window in the front of the church and told me that there are three children up there. One who died here, two others who did not, which she pointed out is confusing. If they didn't die here, why are they still here? And after a little conversation with them, the strong impression she had was that these kids were sneaking around. They were somewhere they were not supposed to be and were having the time of their lives up there. Now, there's no record of a child dying in the church at any point other than during the flu epidemic of 1918, when this building served as a pandemic hospital, and several children died in this building. So in the absence of other information, I have decided that what happened is there was a child in the hospital here ill with the flu, and two of his friends decided to sneak in to visit. And while the nurses were busy, and while they presumed he was still in bed, the three of them snuck off up into the attics of the church for one last adventure, and had such a fantastic time. Some sort of impression of that experience still lingers in the building. But no matter who they are, one thing is clear, that the kids are delighted that someone has finally noticed them. Since that conversation, every time I pass this building, I make a point of waving to the kids. So as we set off down Simpson Street for the rest of our tour, feel free to wave at the kids if you'd like. Hi, kids! We are now going to continue east down Simpson Street, that's away from the mountains, and explore some of the other spooky history that Old Town Lafayette has to offer. As we're walking, if you look to your left, that red house with the big red fence in front of it was the very first house in Lafayette. When coal was discovered here in 1888, Mary Miller called in an engineer to get the new mining operation started, and he built that house, still standing here on Simpson Street, the very first residential building in Lafayette. We're going to walk down Simpson Street and cross Iowa Street and then stop in front of the white stone building on the corner. Should now be standing in front of the white stone building, Lafayette Commons. On this very spot, the most exciting bank robbery in Lafayette history happened in 1922. At 2 a.m. on May 3rd, our marshal, Jordy Stubbs, was making his rounds, and he walked through the alleyway behind this building when he was shot in the leg by two bank robbers. The plan was to blow open the bank vault. These two got a little overexcited with the nitroglycerin, and they didn't just blow open the vault, they blew up the vault and the bank. The vault door ended up in the building across the street. Shrapnel was spread for blocks, and it was also raining money all over the streets nearby. Now, I'm sure this is not what they intended, but it may have been the smartest thing they ever did, because it meant when the neighbors came rushing outside to see what had happened, rather than trying to stop the bank robbers, they were much more interested in gathering money up from the street. The two got away with over $12,000, and although many people thought they knew who had done it, the suspects were never identified, never caught, and made a clean getaway. Okay, let's keep walking down Simpson Street. While we walk, I'm going to tell you a little about the buildings on this street. This section of the Lafayette Commons building on your right was originally the Rocky Mountain Fuel Company's company store and is original to 1901. The first building built in the 19th century burned down in 1900, along with most of Simpson Street. The fire raged from almost up to Mary Miller's church all the way down to the Simpson Mine. When you have a town where all of the buildings are built out of wood and everyone is using coal fires and everything in town is covered in coal dust all the time, fires are pretty common. Luckily, the fire brigade was able to keep the fire from spreading to the residential areas, and business owners quickly rebuilt, so less than a year later, the street was fully up and running again. in the 400 block of Simpson Street, most of these buildings on the right-hand side are original. And if you peek into especially the laundromat, you can see some of the original tin ceilings. As we cross Michigan Street, we enter more of the residential area, and this block gives us some great examples of what are known as box houses, the houses that the mine owners built for some of their higher level workers or for miners with families. Most of these houses on this street have been enlarged and renovated over the years. Originally, the floor plan of all of them would have been pretty much exactly the same, 400 square feet divided into four square rooms, thus box houses. We're still walking east on Simpson Street, and we're going to stop in front of 604 Simpson Street. Stop in front of 604 East Simpson Street and take a look at this unusual building. You can tell just by looking at it that this building was not originally a private residence. In fact, it was the Lafayette Train Depot. It was moved to this location from just a block away on Finch Street and Cleveland Street in 1930 after the mine closed and after the railroad tracks were removed. Originally, the railroad ran right through this edge of town because obviously you needed a cheap, efficient way to move the coal, so the tracks would have run almost exactly where we're standing now. Looking at the building, you can see where the platform would have been. You can see the very distinctive architecture and the arches that show that this was a train station. Now, the fact that the tracks have been removed doesn't seem to have affected one of our most famous unearthly residents here in Lafayette. Many of you may be familiar with the legend of La Llorona, common throughout the Southwest US, Mexico, Central America, and even South America. In a typical version of the legend, a woman discovers her husband with another woman, and in a fit of rage, she drowns their two children. She immediately regrets this, and so she drowns herself as well, but she is denied entrance to the afterlife without her children. So this ghostly woman wanders every night, wearing a long white dress, wailing for her lost children. La Llorona means the crier, the weeping woman. She wanders the streets at night, looking for children that she can steal to try to gain access to the afterlife. This story pops up across two continents and several centuries. But our local version here has a strange and unique twist. Lafayette's La Llorona wanders the railroad tracks, not the waterfront, as usual. probably because we don't have a waterfront. But she is also carrying something rather grisly. She is carrying her dead infant's head in her arms. Now, this obviously does not make any sense in the context of the original story. This is a story of drowning, not beheading. Now, usually, local variations like this signify some connection to a real occurrence in the local history that has become conflated with the larger legend, which is likely what happened here. But so far, I've been unable to find any local events which might be associated with this bizarre, unique take on this timeless legend. But if you ever encounter a weeping woman in a long white dress walking around Old Town, I suggest you get out of her way. Let's keep walking down Simpson Street. On your left here, you'll be passing the building which served as the mortuary here in Lafayette for many decades. Now, one would think that I would have all kinds of great ghost stories to share with you from the mortuary, and I have nothing. It has now been subdivided into 8 apparently ghost-free apartments. Coming up on your right, you'll see the entrance to Simpson Mine Park. Continue walking into the park itself, and if you would like a break at this point, feel free to have a seat. Got a couple of stories at this location. At the far edge of the park, you can see the marker in the wall. That is the site of the original Simpson mine shaft, the very first mine in Lafayette, which was begun in 1888. Mine tunnels from the Simpson and the Cannon mine run under almost all of Old Town. And at any given moment, if you are in Old Town, you can assume you are standing above a mine tunnel running 250 feet below you underground. Like all mining everywhere, coal mining in Lafayette was a dangerous business. Accidents were common, often deadly, and always ruled the miner's fault. Online, you can actually find an inventory of every Colorado mining death between 1860 and 1940. There you can read reports of miners dying in a huge variety of gruesome ways. The obvious coal falls and rock falls, but also falling down mine shafts, being crushed by coal cars, being kicked by mules, electrocution, explosions, fires, floods. There are a million ways to die underground in the West. Now, given all of these terrifying conditions, it's pretty obvious that miners would have been absolutely desperate for anything that could help keep them alive. So miners here were very lucky that Cornish miners who arrived en masse as mining companies recruited them brought with them the Tommyknockers. Tommyknockers are, depending on who you talk to, little men like leprechauns or brownies, or the spirits of dead miners, or spirits of the land itself. They're sometimes mischievous, they like to cause trouble. They'll steal your equipment, they move tools around, play tricks on the miners, but they will also save your life. When a mine collapse is imminent, the Tommyknockers will knock on the walls, giving miners enough time to get out. And this is absolutely true. The Tommyknockers warning saved hundreds and hundreds of miners' lives by giving them enough time to get out of the mine before it collapsed. Now, obviously, we all know that this is the Tommyknockers. But geologists who don't know about the Tommyknockers often explain this phenomenon by pointing out that when coal is under extreme pressure, the structure of the coal itself, the pores, the air bubbles within the coal itself, begin to collapse, and that makes a loud knocking or rapping noise, which absolutely does serve as an early warning signal. Once the coal itself begins to collapse inward, of course, anything that is on top of that coal is going to come down with it. We're now going to leave Simpson Mine Park, leaving via the small street to your right as you are facing the back wall of the park. We're going to walk down Foot Street and stop at the intersection of Cleveland and Foot. But while we walk, I have some stories that I want to share with you from Lafayette's most haunted location, which is unfortunately a little too far away for us to walk to. The Dove House and the Gate House Reception Center, which is near Good Samaritan Hospital, has such consistent supernatural activity that a local ghost hunter group uses it as its training ground. Many of you have probably attended an event at the Gate House or the Dove House. It's an absolutely beautiful event center, overflowing with supernatural manifestations. At the Dove House and the Gate House, there are at least three entities, and also a portal to the underworld. That's right, Lafayette has its very own portal to the underworld. How many cities can say that? In the Dove House, there is the ghost of a little girl. She is 3 years old, and we know this because they asked her how old she was. And though I am usually very skeptical of EVPs, I must say, very clearly, a young child's voice responds, "I'm three." When one gentleman who helps to set up for big events was mopping the floor, through the wet floor in front of him as he was mopping, he saw two tiny little bare footprints run through the mop water on the floor and across the room. And then he took the rest of the day off. Here at the Cleveland Street intersection, if you look to the left, in 2015, half a block down Cleveland Street from where you're standing right now, a giant sinkhole opened up when one of the poorly filled in mine shafts opened up again and nearly swallowed an SUV. Luckily, the local fire department was able to extract the driver safely and eventually pull the SUV back out from where it was teetering on the edge. This driver had a very lucky escape because that shaft is 250 feet deep and it took the city 4 months to fill it with cement. So now this mine shaft is filled and safe. This mine shaft is filled and safe. Of course, there are dozens of other mine shafts all over Lafayette, and we're not exactly sure where they all are. We are turning right on Cleveland Street, heading back west toward Public Street. As Simpson Street was the commercial district of town, Cleveland Street was residential, and it was the home of many of the most prominent residents of Lafayette. We're going to stop at 501 Cleveland Street, which is just before you will cross Michigan Street. And while we walk, here's a few more stories from the Dove House and the Gate House. In the Gate House, which was the old dairy farm, there is the ghost of a little boy. He loves to play with the lights. He loves to play tricks on people. The staff will often hear him running around upstairs when nobody's home. One of the local ghost hunter organizations decided to really challenge him. And so they placed a lot of balls spread out around the floor, and they put a piece of tape underneath each ball so that they could test to see if he moved them at all. And they left an audio recording going. They locked up the room and they left the gatehouse for an hour to go over and do some other ghost huntery things over at the Dove House. They came back after 1 hour and opened the door, and all the balls were gone. They hadn't been slightly moved or nudged. They were gone. They listened to the audio recording, and there was 1 hour of silence, and then, as they heard themselves walking through the building toward the room, they suddenly heard... And as they heard themselves unlock the door of the room and open the door, they eventually found the balls hidden all together in an alcove in the wall behind a statue, off ground level. Apparently, he wanted to cache them for a future playdate. Guests will occasionally see an elderly lady in a nightgown who is going up a particular staircase and will come and notify staff that they need to go check upstairs, because there seems to be an older woman who may have gotten confused and wandered off. Of course, she's never there. Now, here at 501 Cleveland Street, this is a rare example of a two-story home in Old Town that was never a boarding house. This is the home of Thomas Miller. He was the son of Mary Miller, and he was Lafayette's first mayor. He built this beautiful house in 1900, but unfortunately, he only lived here for 2 years, because in 1902, he was beheaded by a mine elevator in the Strathmore Mine. He was apparently looking up the shaft to see if the elevator was coming, and it was. Some local residents have reported seeing Mr. Miller walking home from the mine back to his front door, seemingly unaware that he is dead. He walks up to his front porch and disappears. Now, luckily for those who have encountered him, he does still have his head, apparently because he hasn't yet realized that he's lost it. As we continue walking west up Cleveland Street, notice these cacti here in front of the house. These were commonly planted all over Lafayette and throughout the Southwest, especially under bedroom windows, because they made a very effective deterrent for peeping Toms. And especially in the early days, when there were probably about 10 men for every woman in town, that was probably a pretty smart precaution. As we cross Michigan Street, if you look to the south, that nondescript little white garage at the end of the lot on the east side of the street was Lafayette's first jail. It served as the jail until 1893, when the new City Hall on Simpson Street was built. That's now the Habitat for Humanity building. Again, you would think I would have lots of great ghost stories for you here, but I have nothing. Apparently, it was a very happy jail. Now, this next home you're passing on your right, the home directly across the street to the west of Thomas Miller's home, is the Mary Miller home. Mary Miller, founder of Lafayette, lived in this home until she died. Also, look down and make sure you notice some of the only remaining original slate sidewalks in Lafayette. We're going to continue walking west up Cleveland Street. We're going to stop at the intersection of Cleveland and Iowa Street. While we walk there, I have one last story from the Dove House and the Gate House. Of course, the portal to the underworld. On a wall in the Dove House, there are two orange rectangular spots. They cannot be cleaned off. They will bleed through anytime they are painted over. There are now 3 layers of wallpaper on top of these spots, and yet there they are. All right, if we can't get rid of them, I guess we'll cover them. Anytime they hang anything in front of these spots on the wall, It is on the floor by the next morning. Picture frames break, things fall down. They will not be removed, and they will not be covered. And at one point, Alex Turney was walking through the house and came upon a woman who was standing in that hallway staring at these spots on the wall. The woman grabbed her by the arm and said, "This is a portal to the underworld. You need to have it removed." Yes, absolutely. Of course, we will get right on that. But of course, she doesn't know how to remove a portal to the underworld. So if anyone listening to this audio tour knows how to remove a portal to the underworld, please contact Alex Turney at the Lionsgate Complex, and I'm sure she would love to talk to you. We're now turning right on Iowa Street. This building on your right was the original mine doctor's office. So if you were injured in a mining accident here in Lafayette, this is where you would have been brought to try to patch you up again. We are going to keep walking down Iowa Street until we get back to Simpson Street, and we are going to turn left. And we are going to turn left, heading back up Simpson Street to the Mary Miller Theater. We're going to stop for a minute in front of 304 East on Simpson. This building was the Moon Meat Market, another major feature for our commercial district here. As you can see, the left-hand side is fully restored. The right-hand side is not. It is owned by a different owner. And while the main building has no reputation for spirits or hauntings, according to many locals, this small section here on the right has some serious negative energy. Some people speculate that this section of the building may have served as the slaughterhouse, which is plausible because it would certainly have been happening on site at that period. Others believe we're standing directly over the site of a terrible accident in the Simpson Mine, and that the negative energy from that is wafting upwards. But in the very eloquent phrase of a local sensitive, whatever happened here, it was bad. Okay, keep walking west until you're standing back in front of the Mary Miller Theater. Now, no ghost tour of Lafayette would be complete without talking about our most famous undead resident, the Lafayette Vampire. This tour will not take you into the cemetery, but you're of course welcome to visit anytime during open hours and check him out yourself. People from all over the country come here to visit our local occult hero, Todor Glava, the Vampire of Lafayette. And well, they should, because as far as I've been able to discover, He is the only vampire west of the Mississippi River. So first, of course, we have to address the legend. Shortly after the turn of the century, a Transylvanian vampire was running amok in Lafayette. Mass death, chaos, terror. He was finally caught, and the local community banded together and staked him through the heart and buried him in the Potter's Field section of the Lafayette Cemetery. From the stake in his heart grew a huge cedar tree, which is still there, growing directly out of the center of his gravesite. And from his terrifying long fingernails grew blood-red rose bushes. If you visit the grave at midnight on Halloween, you may see the vampire sitting on his own gravestone, his long black hair falling in front of his deathly pale face, his long black coat pooling in the darkness around his feet. But don't get too close, because there have been reports of people being beaten up by an invisible assailant near the grave at night. Now, this story is a ghost hunter's dream, and everyone from professional occultists to local teenagers screw up their courage to visit the vampire's grave to see if they can encounter this undead legend. But who was he really? This surprises many people, but hysteria around vampires was actually pretty common around the turn of the century in the United States. In fact, especially in New England, Americans were so terrified of vampires that they were exhuming their own dead relatives to stake or behead them to prevent them from coming back and sucking the life out of living family members. Now, most of this vampire panic was a result of a wave of tuberculosis that was sweeping through the eastern part of the country. And if you don't understand that tuberculosis is a contagious illness, the symptoms of tuberculosis seem to mimic those that we associate with vampirism. There's the deathly pale skin, the wasting flesh. They called it consumption for a reason. You're being consumed alive. But most importantly, people kept finding people and dead bodies with blood on their teeth and in their mouth. And if you don't realize that that's because people are coughing up blood from their own lungs, vampirism makes as much sense as anything else. Now, Colorado was one of the most famous locations for tuberculosis treatment. In fact, one of the most famous sanatoriums in the country was up at the base of Mount Sanitas in Boulder. It's now Boulder Community Hospital. And people were flocking here from all over to be treated for tuberculosis, because at that point they believed that you could treat tuberculosis with high altitude and cold air, and we have plenty of both. So it seems reasonable to speculate that poor Mr. Todor Glava may have died of tuberculosis, and that and being from Transylvania is all it took for locals to start suspecting that he was a vampire. But that's not true. Thanks to the fantastic research of Chris DeBerry, the director of the Miners Museum here in Lafayette, we now know what happened to poor Mr. Glava. And if I tell you that he died in 1918, you may also begin to guess. Todor Glava was a Transylvanian miner who died during the 1918 flu epidemic, and he was buried in the Potter's Field. His gravestone is unusual. It is just a slab of cement in which someone has written the words and dates with a stick. But even more unusual is the fact that it's the only gravestone in the Potter's Field. Of all the people who were buried here, only this stone was placed. Someone wanted to make sure that this man was remembered. But the weirdest thing about the Lafayette vampire legend is that it didn't even start until 40 years after the man died. The very first mention that we can find of the Lafayette vampire legend pop up in the 1960s, and they appear to just emerge out of nowhere. It seems likely that with the upsurge in interest in Dracula, monster movies, this entire genre, during the mid-century in the United States, some local content creator saw the word Transylvania on the grave, along with these other very picturesque elements of the tree and the roses, which sadly are no longer there, and decided that this had all of the makings of a fantastic urban legend. Since then, the legend has firmly entrenched itself in our community, to the point that finding the grave of the Lafayette vampire is a rite of passage for Centaurus High School students. If you don't find the grave by the time you graduate, did you even go to school? Now, I know a lot of people feel sorry for Todor Glava, who was just a poor, innocent Transylvanian miner who's now been turned into a notorious vampire. And I can't speak to how Mr. Glava feels about it, but personally, if 100 years after my death, teenagers are breaking into the cemetery on Halloween to visit my grave, that will be the greatest achievement of my life. I aspire to urban legend status. So the next time you're passing Lafayette Cemetery, drop in and see if you can find his grave. You can ask him how he feels about becoming the most famous vampire of the West, and just spend a few minutes exploring our fantastically interesting cemetery. That concludes our ghost tour of Lafayette. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you've picked up a little local history along the way. There are many other walking tours offered in person through the Miners Museum, available on your schedule, so check out the website or give them a call and dig deeper into the fascinating history of this wonderful small town. I'm Olivia Mickle of What's Her Name. Thank you for listening.